Okay, meeting will come to order. This is Governmental Operations and Veterans Affairs today on March 23rd. And members, I have a couple of announcements here before we get started. First of all, if you want to pull out your agenda for today, it lists tomorrow's meeting, but that information is incorrect. We've just updated it with very recently. And so if you can cross out on your agenda and make sure your LA knows as well. Tomorrow we're going to start meeting at 10 a.m., not 10:15, and we will be in the basement hearing room the entire day. I'd say if you want to plan 10 to 5, and if we can get out of here by 3 or 4, that'd be great. And I think there's going to be a couple more bills added in addition to what's already listed here. So it's best to check the website because we've been updating that about 3 times a day. Mr. Neske has been diligent in getting bills up as things process through other committees and come to us. So please remember tomorrow from 10 to 5 in the basement hearing room. At one point we were going to be switching rooms, but we're not. We've got the basement hearing room all day tomorrow. And then we'll also be meeting Monday evening and Tuesday morning and Tuesday evening as we come up to first deadline Tuesday at midnight. Everybody knows our committee does more bills than any other committee in the legislature, so thank you for your diligence. Okay, let's see. First of all, I want to welcome a group here. We have ninth grade students from St. Louis Park High School. So where are you? Welcome. And then also, Representative Olson has a guest here in the audience. It's David Oberg from the Zodiac Home in North Branch. And where's David? Welcome.
Madam Chair.
Representative Olson.
My wife, Heidi, too.
Oh. Hello, Heidi. With the long hours.
Poor woman.
Long hours at the legislature, this may be one of the only times she can see you is when you're sitting in committee, huh? I can relate. Okay, let's do the minutes. Representative Neil Peterson.
Madam Chair, I'm prepared to make the motion to approve both the minutes of March 21st and March 26th.
Okay, and actually we'll do those in two motions. Representative Neil Peterson moves approval of the minutes of the March 21st meeting. Any discussion on that? All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the March 21st minutes are approved. Representative Neil Peterson moves approval of the minutes of the March 22nd meeting. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and those minutes are approved as well. And thanks to our diligent staff here, Ms. Durenberger, who's worked long hours after our evening meetings to get those completed. So thank you. Members, we've got a lot on our plate here today. We've got 5 bills scheduled, and we're going to go till about 12:15. This is one of those rare days that we don't have to break early for a session. And so I'm hoping that we can get through the agenda here today. And first I want to just start out, too, by just telling everybody in the committee, why don't you just take a deep breath today. Just we're here. We're in a professional atmosphere. The citizens are watching, and just kind of keep that in mind as we proceed through these next very stressful days. So thank you. And on that nice note, Representative Khan, I understand there's treats here today.
Yes, today is my birthday, and in this, having been a long-time pro-family mother, I always made the birthday cake for my birthday along with anyone else's in the house. And this is not just with the, you know, the difficulty of dealing with birthday cake. This is a variation. These are mini chocolate truffle cakes, and it's a variation of a chocolate, quadruple chocolate pie that I've made that won second prize, not first, at the state fair 2 years in a row. So, 2 seconds. And so these are being passed around. I forgot to bring napkins, so they're being passed around with a box of Kleenex.
Madam Chair, on behalf of the Republicans, we will no longer characterize Representative Khan as an anti-family
member.
You can have your cake and eat it too. Yeah.
Okay. I hope the rest of the meeting is that humorous. Let's go. Chair will move that House File 2805 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Civil Law Committee. Representative, welcome. Thank you for your patience this morning. Your bill is before us. Please present it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this bill is here because of the Article 2 only. The rest of it was pretty much handled in my Commerce Committee. This has to do with the Interstate Compact, and what we're trying to do here is there's been a movement at the federal level to basically federalize the regulation of insurance. The states, in order to protect their regulatory privilege, have gotten together to establish an interstate compact where products can be filed through the interstate compact for all the states that are involved in the compact. And that's why it's here. And I'll open up questions.
Representative Wilkins, so if I'm looking at it right here, that would be pages 12 through 29. Is that correct for Article 2?
I don't know if there is an engrossed copy or not, but let me see my section.
Yeah.
Yeah, page 12. Yep.
Do you have the most recent version, Representative Wilkin?
I don't know if it's the most recent version.
Probably one on the table there. Let's see the page. Mr. Shepherd will help you out with that.
Madam Chair, this, just so members know, this is a, yeah, there is an engrossed version. This is an NAIC Model Act. That's the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. So this isn't some other group putting this together. This is the regulators through the states that are participating. It needs 26 states to participate. I think we're up to 21 right now that have approved this. We do have people who can testify on the details if members have questions on that.
Okay, why don't we get the testifiers up here first then?
I think they're just available for questions.
Oh, for questions. Okay, well, let's start the questions then. Representative Loeffler.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I have an amendment, if whenever you'd like to take it. It's the 2805A1 amendment.
Representative Loeffler moves the A1 amendment. Representative Loeffler.
And the background on this, what the amendment would do is direct the Commissioner of Commerce to consult with the chairs of the legislative committees on insurance on issues related to the compact and its deliberations. And why I'm bringing this forward, Representative Liebling and I serve on the Commerce Committee with Representative Wilkin, and I understand why we're doing this. It's to try and create uniformity across the country. We're sort of kind of be pushed into it because if we don't do it, the federal government is just going to mandate uniformity out of federal legislation. We think states ought to work together on model legislation. But it does tend to take insurance policy in some areas out of the control of the legislature and the committees that typically debate these sort of issues. They're going to start with life insurance and long-term care, but this may be a model that will go into other lines of insurance as well. And I felt like there needed to be a connection between the legislature and these discussions. The compact directs the voting person for the state to be the Commissioner of Commerce, who, as we know, is an appointed person of the governor, who may or may not have experience in these particular lines of insurance. And I just felt like the policymakers and the legislature ought to be kept informed as things go forward. And so what this would do is ask the Commissioner of Commerce or direct him or her to consult with the chairs of the legislative committees on insurance on matters related to the compact, and it outlines them. It's topics that they may select for study, like whether they go into auto insurance or health insurance or other areas, major issues of insurance policy on which the Commissioner of Commerce anticipates taking a position. We, for example, have been engaged in the last couple of years about debates on no fault and not no fault, and if they went into the auto line, that might be an example of something that we'd want them to at least consult. They still get to make their own decision, but they at least get the input of the legislative body. And then last, it asked them to annually just provide information to the legislature about what the compact's been doing and anticipates doing. And so it's just creating an information loop between the administration, which will be our main representative to this, and the legislative body. And I have reviewed it with the representatives of the Department of Commerce and with Representative Wilkins.
Representative Wilkins.
Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you, Representative Loeffler. You had mentioned this to me and got me the language, and I think it's good language to keep the legislature involved in the whole process, so I would view this as a friendly amendment.
Okay. Questions on the A1 amendment? Okay, is there anybody from the audience who would like to testify for or against the A1 amendment? Okay, Representative Loeffler, you get the last word and then we'll vote.
Would just appreciate your support. Thank you.
Okay. All in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails and amendment is adopted. Okay. Questions for Representative Wilkin with the bill as amended? Okay, let's get people from the audience. Anybody from the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill as amended? Please come forward. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Trial Lawyers Association to express some concerns about the compact and its potential impact on Minnesota consumers. I won't go into lengthy detail about those concerns. They may be more appropriately addressed in the Civil Law Committee, but I would just share with the committee that we are establishing a private regulatory entity that we think is not subject to a sufficient amount of legislative or regulatory oversight that will have the ability to approve insurance products for our consumers, where if consumers need or seek redress against this compact, which immunizes itself from suit, but even filing a claim, it is required that that claim be brought in the home jurisdiction of wherever they create this compact. And we think that that removes state court jurisdiction and state court, state consumer protections from products that are governed by this compact. We have been involved on behalf of the Minnesota Trial Lawyers Association in the development of this issue and have always been uncomfortable with the nature of this compact, where we believe you have an appointed regulatory entity that is able to set the rules, enforce the rules, and sit as judge on what those rules are. And we think that that is unprecedented, not just in the insurance area, but in any area of regulation across the states. To the extent we can benefit from a streamlined process of insurance approvals, we believe that that may have some merit, but simply to establish a private corporation outside of the purview of the legislature, where your recourse is to opt out when you're doing this bill right now, as it relates to long-term care, for example. If you want to opt out of the regulations for long-term care, the requirement is that you opt out before you enact this compact. We just think that those are issues that need to be addressed and debated so that we are not rushing to, in the effort for simplification, rushing an effort that we will have a very difficult time getting out of once it is adopted. And generally, state consumer protection laws have served Minnesota well. We think this removes some of those protections and have concerns about it, and we can address them, I think, further in civil law. And be happy to answer any specific questions that the committee members may have. We don't believe this is an innocuous proposal that simply allows the uniform approval of forms. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Questions for Mr. Carlson? Representative Liedling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Carlson, could you just direct us to the portion of the bill where that you have concerns about the jurisdiction, loss of jurisdiction by Minnesota courts?
Madam Chairman and members, I believe the page and line numbers will line up. I have an internet copy of my bill, and I don't know in particular which copy you have, but I'm looking at what would be page 13, line 5. This allows the Interstate Product Regulation Compact to develop uniform standards for insurance products that are covered under this, establish a central
clearinghouse give appropriate regulatory approval to product filings, and then if you follow further on, those are their authorized duties. And if you look at page, what I'm looking at is page 15, lines 5. It says, venue is proper and judicial proceedings by or against the commission shall be brought solely and exclusively in a court of competent jurisdiction where the principal office of the commission is located. And we believe that that removes state court jurisdiction from the insurance products that are covered under this particular compact. They have, so further on, they have on 16.16, they have subpoena powers. It's a subpoena information, and I don't believe that that information that they have the ability to subpoena is covered by our Data Practices Act. They can accept at 16.27, they can accept any and all appropriate donations and grants of money and equipment. We believe from our initial review of this is that the compact will essentially be funded by the insurance industry and not by the compacting states. And while that may be appropriate and proper, I think you need to know that this commission is going to be funded by by the insurance industry and not by the compacting states. And the immunity provision is on 20.114. It provides qualified immunity, defense, and indemnification for the officers, members, and employees of the commission. They shall be immune from suit and liability, either personally or in their official capacity. Those are just some of the issues that we think need review in the civil law committee.
So I'll bring it up here.
Okay. Questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other member questions to House File 2805 as amended?
Madam Chair.
Representative Kahn.
This is before us because the compact is an act of government, forming the compact is an act of government operations. Is that the...
Representative Wilson.
Is that the issue?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Paula, Representative Kahn.
Okay, you know, I think the things that Joel has said is kind of, what is your answer to the fact of that we're taking away some state jurisdiction, in terms of that, I think, and that this other issue on venue, does that really mean that the venue for any insurance issue would be... Would you just explain that?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Kahn.
Representative Wilson.
This, the people that are making up the interstate compact are going to be the insurance regulators from the states that are participating. It's not going to be insurance companies running the show. These are the people who regulate the insurance companies. As far as the venue is concerned, the venue for suits against the interstate compact itself, and I can be corrected if this is incorrect, but this is my understanding. The venue issue is only for any suits involving the actual compact. If it's a suit against an insurance company for some kind of wrongful act on a product, that can be venued right here in Minnesota. We don't lose our control of that. And that's really the important consumer protection part. And our Commerce Department will have input, just like all the other Commerce Commissioners, about the regulation and consumer protection that are adopted by the Interstate Compact.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Hi, Robin Rowan with the Insurance Federation of Minnesota. I just wanted to add, Madam Chair, briefly to some comments that this compact has been approved by 21 states thus far. It's been endorsed by the NCSL and NCOIL as a very viable way to approve product filings and to modernize just the life insurance industry products. No other states have raised concerns or tried to modify the compact in any way regarding the issues that Mr. Carlson raised.
Okay. Questions for the testifier? Representative Kahn.
What are those 21 states?
Mr. Rowan.
I have them here. Madam Chair, Representative Kahn.
Really
would you like Texas, Pennsylvania, Idaho, Indiana, Kansas, Maryland, Nebraska, North Carolina, Puerto Rico, did not state that they're on the list, Vermont, Washington, Colorado, Hawaii, Iowa, Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Utah, Virginia, and West Virginia.
Okay, now the question is, what are the state capitals of each of those states? Quick.
Can I call my kids?
Madam Chair.
President Cox.
The relevant question was, are they red or blue states?
there's a good mixture of red and blue in here.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How many states, again, have to ratify this before it goes into effect?
Representative Wilton.
26.
26. Okay.
Liebling.
All right. My other question was, going to the point that Mr. Carlson brought up, which was 16.27 is the line number about accepting donations and grants of money, and his contention that this may mean that the funding is going to come from the insurers. Where is the funding expected to come from, and what would be your answer to his concern about that?
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, I don't know exactly where the funding mix is going to come from. I don't know that we can predict that now. Some states might allocate money, but, you know, likely they will take money to run the operation from insurance companies, but that happens in our own Commerce Department. We charge them fees for filings and stuff, and they have to pay the way. So I don't think that's anything that's threatening. Insurance commissioners are there to regulate these people. It's a kind of a dichotomy of duties, but it's somewhat a service and it's somewhat regulation to make sure they play fair and make sure they're protecting the consumers.
Follow up, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Wilkin, I can appreciate what you're saying, but this section that we're talking about here doesn't talk about charging fees. It talks about accept any and all appropriate donations and grants of money and other things. So, I don't know that I appreciate what you said, but I don't think you totally answered my question about this section.
Ms. Rowan.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, that section is in reference to the NAIC. The National Association of Insurance Commissioners is expected to provide some direct funding in addition to fees paid for the actual filing to help get the compact off the ground.
Anything further, Representative Liebling?
No, ma'am.
Okay, next up, Representative Hoppe.
I'll pass, Madam Chair.
Okay, other questions for members? And I can't recall, did I ask if there's anybody from the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Ron. Representative Wilkin, I think we're ready to vote on your bill. You get the last word. Representative Wilkin.
I'm all set. I really don't have anything to add.
Do you want to ask us to do anything?
Please pass the civil law.
Oh, okay, got it.
Very grateful.
All right.
I look forward to going to civil law. It's a great place.
Thank you. Chair will renew the motion that House File 2805, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to civil law. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and bill goes to civil law. Thank you, Representative Wilkin, and I know you have the next bill up as well. Members, that is House File 3507. Chair will move that House File 3507 be recommended to pass to the General Register. And we lost Representative Wilkin. Okay, Representative Wilkin, we have your bill before us. I don't see any amendments. And you're looking at the General Register, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Please present your bill.
Okay, Madam Chair, members, this bill was brought to me by Senator Rest, actually. She is the current chair of the Legislative Audit Commission. I'm the vice chair. And she having much more of a historical perspective on the Legislative Audit Commission, just kind of looking at things and how we appoint the commission in the first place and how it was set up, and now that it's kind of grown up and been well established, she thought it's time to change the way the members are appointed. And currently there's some people, I think particularly on the Senate side, that are members of the commission by virtue of their position. I think the finance chair is automatically on there. What Senator Rest proposed was that it just go through, we just scale it back to, I believe, 12 members, and that those be appointed three by each caucus, the leader of each caucus. The other thing that it does is to make it so that while those are appointments are being decided, that the members from the prior term continue on so there can be some continuity. And the problem gets to be is if there's a delay in those appointments, the topic selection that happens this time of the year gets delayed, and we lose valuable time with auditors not getting out there and getting the those things done. I do have an oral amendment to make, Madam Chair, and that would be to delete sections 2 through 5, and this would match up with primarily with what was done in the Senate. There's one other section that we're deleting, but it's to avoid a problem down the road further.
Representative Welkin, I want to make sure I heard you right. You're looking at deleting section 2, 3, 4, and 5, is that correct?
That's correct, ma'am.
Okay, Chair, we'll move that oral amendment that's beginning on line 2.17, and that's through the end of the bill on page 3. Representative Wilkin, did you want to say a little bit more about that?
Madam Chair, the legislative auditor is here, too, to, if there's questions that I can answer. I've got a lifeline in the audience.
Okay. To my oral amendment, on behalf of the author, to strike sections 2, 3, 4, and 5. Any questions for Representative Wilkin? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wilkin, what's in the repealer that we're... now not repealing?
I'm sure Representative Liebling, that is a section that allows members to make a suggestion for having a topic audited in any time during the year, I believe, and have it evaluated for possible audit by the auditor.
And Representative Liebling, there's a House research bill summary, and it does fill out on the back there a little bit more information on that. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and I'd be happy to answer any additional questions that members might have.
Okay. Questions to Mr. Nobles? All right. Any other questions from members on this amendment currently before us? Strike section 2, 3, 4, 5. Let's get a vote on that amendment. All in favor of that oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and amendment is adopted. Okay, so we have House File 3507 before us as amended, and so I believe what's remaining is just section 1 of the bill. Any questions for Representative Wilkin or Mr. Nobles? Okay. And is there anybody from the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill? Okay, I think we're ready. Representative Wilkin.
I just ask members to be so kind as to send this to the General Register.
Okay. Chair renews the motion that House File 3507, as amended, be recommended to pass the General Register. In discussion, all in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and bill goes to General Register.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Okay, while we're transitioning here to the next bill with Representative Powell, I'd like to welcome another group that we have joining us here in the audience today. And this is from Risen Christ Catholic School, and it looks like... Representative Beard, is this from your district?
Nope, I'm good people. I'd like to welcome.
Well, welcome. Thank you. Great. Okay, and next bill up is House File 3590. And Chair will move that House File 3590 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Health Committee. Is that correct, Representative Powell?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, we do have your bill before us. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Due to federal changes of the Medicaid formulas that determine pharmacy reimbursement, it is likely that pharmacists across the state will experience financial losses, which would greatly impact access of medical assistance patients to professional pharmacists. As of today, we are losing 12 to 13 pharmacies a year in Minnesota. This rate of loss is due to very low profit margins that are common in this industry. This rate, it seems to me, will only grow larger in the future if we do not do something to ensure that pharmacies are adequately reimbursed for their services. House File 3590 was brought to me by the Minnesota Pharmacists Association and proposes an advisory group of stakeholders that would report its findings to the legislature by January of 2007. I have with me today Todd Sorensen, who will testify on the scope of the problem and the Pharmacists Association proposed plan.
Mr. Sorensen, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Todd Sorensen. I'm an associate professor at the University of Minnesota at the College of Pharmacy, and I've been a pharmacist for 12 years. I'm also the president-elect of the Minnesota Pharmacists Association. And thank you for the opportunity to testify today. The intent of this bill is to establish an advisory committee to respond to the federal reforms that were made to pharmacy reimbursement under Medicaid in the Federal Deficit Reduction Act. Legislation also requires the state to do a cost of dispensing study that will provide the background necessary for the advisory committee to make these recommendations. This whole issue is a fairly complicated issue, and because of its complicated nature, it's part of the reason why what Congress did inadvertently has created a problem that could severely affect a lot of pharmacies in Minnesota and severely affect the access to medications in the state. Traditionally, payment to pharmacies for generic prescription drugs and services related to dispensing have been paid through a combination of a state MAC price, MAC standing for maximum allowable cost, set by DHS, and a dispensing fee set in Minnesota statute. Because some of the payment to pharmacies was built into this MAC price, the dispensing fee has been kept artificially low and does not reflect the actual costs associated with the dispensing of a prescription. The new law eliminates the system and sets a new formula for determining federal upper limits, or FULLs, that will be used to pay pharmacies for generic drugs. The new federal upper limits will be based on a different pricing mechanism, that being AMP, or Average Manufacturer Price. This new system will eliminate the portion of the pharmacy payments that was built into the MAC prices. The problem is that the definition of AMP has yet to be fully developed, and there is a broad range of implications related to how it is defined. Entities that purchase prescription drugs are categorized into classes of trade and have access to different prices and different discounts. Current law defines AMP as the average price paid to the manufacturer by wholesalers for drugs distributed to the retail pharmacy class of trade after deducting customary prompt pay discounts. However, the new law does not clarify that manufacturers should also deduct sales to mail-order pharmacies or nursing home pharmacies that purchase medications at much lower prices from that calculation of AMP. Thus, some manufacturers may continue to include sales to mail-order and nursing home pharmacies in the calculation of AMP, pushing that base price lower than what retail pharmacies can actually purchase the medications for. Over the course of the next 9 months, there will be further definitions made by CMS on this new pricing mechanism. This legislation establishes an advisory committee of individuals with expertise in the pharmacy distribution system who can work with the Department of Human Services in informing recommendations to the legislature on how to implement the reforms in a way that will not compromise access to pharmacy services for Medicaid patients or create disincentives for dispensing generic prescriptions that could ultimately increase costs to the Medicaid program. Due to the extensiveness of these reforms and the aggressive timeline for definition and implementation of the new payment system, it's necessary to convene an advisory committee to process this new information and make recommendations to DHS and to the legislature. So on behalf of the Minnesota Pharmacists Association, I'd like to thank you for your time and request that you support passage of House File 3590.
Okay, Mr. Sorensen, we'll see if there's questions. First up, Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, not so much a question, just a compliment or an observation for Representative Powell. Looking at this, my first thought was, oh no, another commission. But you know, members, this actually is a very focused and targeted group of professionals who are going to give advice, and then most importantly, they're going to go away when they're done. So thank you, Representative Powell. I'm pretty comfortable with this.
Well, very good. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Beard, for that. This is a very focused group. There is a job to be done. They want to get it done, and they want to be able to give us the correct answers to some questions.
Okay, next up, Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Powell. I don't know if you've got an answer to this question. I was meeting with a constituent who is a pharmacist just recently, and he had said that the county commissioners had opted to, on some legislation that we had put forth just recently, allow members who are on Minnesota Care to actually go to the drugstore and opt out of having to pay the fee. Are you familiar with that process, and could you maybe expand on that a little bit?
I can talk a little bit about it. I'm sure Dr. Sonson could do better, but actually last year, I believe, we put on some co-pays on Minnesota Care, and maybe it was medical assistance as well. And they were very nominal, a buck or two, and there was a cap of, I believe, $12 a month, I think, something like that, as a cap. It went to court, and the court decided that the way the law was set up, that it was unenforceable. They did seem to leave us an out in terms of putting the onus on the recipient for proving that they cannot pay the copays. However, that would be something we would have to enact into law and clarify into law. We haven't done that yet. It is a very sore point, I know, amongst the pharmacists and the copays. If you look at the bill, if you look at line 117 and 118, you'll see that that's under additional costs. There's been quite a bit of loss to the industry because of this court case. I will also add, I did read the court case when it first came out a couple months ago, I believe, and it seemed to me that the court probably did the right thing. I don't think that the way we did it really could have withstood the scrutiny, and it didn't. So,
follow up, Representative Houston.
Thank you, Representative Powell. And kind of the follow-on to that is, as I talked with the pharmacists and some of the workers there who are operating on a thin margin, particularly some of our community pharmacists, it's coming right out of their pocket. And the thing that was frustrating them is they would get a card from the county that basically said that they did not have to pay this copay, and then they would walk up to the front and buy a pack of cigarettes. And so to our pharmacists, and I would just encourage them, maybe we can work together to put an amendment together for the floor that would maybe rectify this this process. I'm open to suggestions, but it's something we've got to fix.
Now, Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, I've had the same complaints from pharmacists in emails and just conversations that I've had, and they tell me much the same thing. It's something we should fix. If you're able to drive your own personal vehicle to the pharmacy, talk on the cell phone, you ought to be able to help participate in the cost of your health care. And that's what this was. It's a very nominal cost and something that we should be able to do. And the reason, you know, the court ordered the issuance of the recipients, this letter and these cards, the court ordered that to let the recipients know that they did not have to pay. So that was a court-ordered thing and not a county-initiated thing.
Follow-up, Representative Houston?
That's all, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay, other questions from members? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Powell. I think this is a good concept, but we've kind of got off onto something that did raise a concern about me. The study is to be focused, as you described it, to deal with Minnesota Care and medical assistance paid for drugs. But it looks like, and this might be something that you could address in the next committee, but it looks like in your set of definitions, you're not limiting it to that. And in the recent discussion we just had about line 17 and 18 on page 1, where we're talking about bad debts, uncollected copays, payment lag times, high rate of rejected claims, I think that probably applies to anyone who comes in with insurance these days, and all the complicated products, and Medicare Part D has certainly made it much more complicated. And I would hope this would not be an area in which we're expecting Minnesota Care and medical assistance to pick up losses incurred because of the problems that we've already had to address legislatively in Medicare Part D or problems with private insurance. And so you might want to look at the scope here, because I assume that your intent was just to focus it on state obligations and paying pharmacists fairly for state-insured persons.
Kristen Paul.
Madam Chair, Representative Offler, that's exactly right. This is basically for our public health care programs and the cost of the pharmacies and their cost of doing business. They are severely constrained just by the reimbursements that they get. And so when you put all this into statute and try to guess how, what type of profit they deserve is really what we're doing, and then the federal law changes, then all of a sudden they're left down, hanging out there because they can't be nimble enough due to the fact that we have this stuff in statute. So we need to have a, we do need to study this. It needs to be done by the experts, and we need to have the right answers to this instead of guessing all the time.
Okay. Further questions? Any other members that have questions? Thank you, Mr. Robertson. And is there anybody from the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill? Okay. No further questions for Representative Powell? Representative Powell, you get the last word before we vote.
Well, thank you for not sending me to civil law.
You're welcome.
Health and policy and finance would be better.
Okay. Chair renews the motion that House File 3590 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Health Policy and Finance Committee. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and bill goes to Health Policy and Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Okay. Next bill up is Matt Dean's bill. It's House File 2961. Chair will move that, Representative Seifert, you wanted to move this one. Is that correct?
Sure.
Representative Seifert.
Sure. Madam Chair, I will move to that House File 2961 be recommended to pass and be re-referred, I think, to State Government Finance.
Your
Representative, that is correct.
Okay.
Okay, Representative Dean, we do have your bill before us. Please present it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is Bill 2961. This is the Governor's Pay for Performance Initiative. And those of you who were listening during the State of the State address got a preview to this. And this basically is looking to strengthen the accountability that we as legislators have to our constituents by saying that we are going to be held accountable for our results. Just as people in the medical community are being held for their results, where we want results, we have accountability. In our education committee that I sit on, when we ask teachers for results, we are also demanding accountability. And many folks in the coffee shops and out in our hometowns are saying that we should probably have the same thing. I know that as a first-term legislator, like many of you here, that I see on this committee came in with me as a freshman class. We wanted to try to change the tone and get things done. And many of us were very, very frustrated during the last session that we felt that we had less of a voice in trying to move things along and being accountable for the results. Unfortunately, we went into special session and also a partial government shutdown. As a first-term legislator, I felt that something needed to be done to demand more accountability, and that's why I introduced the bill during the special session last year. Something that I felt very strongly about and continue to feel strongly about today. I believe it was the right thing to do then. It's even more so the right thing to do now. Normally, at this time of the day, I'm across the hall in the Health Policy and Finance Committee that I've seen many of you before. And we talk about results in that committee as well. In touring several hospitals around the state, I was interested in one concept that they have. In the hospitals, they have something called a can't-happen event. And it's kind of an interesting concept that there are things that you expect to happen every once in a while, bad things go wrong, but there are can't-happen events in hospitals, and I think there's seven of them. But the first one is wrong site surgery. And, for example, you get the wrong leg amputated. That's a can't-happen event. And so what this bill is trying to do is make a government shutdown a can't-happen event. And as we move forward and talk about this bill a little bit, it's, as you see before you, it's a fairly simple bill. It has two components, one addressing the budget year, the odd year, one addressing the even year, which is this year. And basically what it says is that if the House and Senate come together, pass their bills, we move along. And if we are not able to do so, in other words, if there is a government shutdown or a partial government shutdown, we forfeit salary in both the even year and the odd year. In the even year, for failing to pass our major omnibus spending bills, which is basically not doing so is when you stand between a government employee and their paycheck. And in the odd year, when we have a forecast that predicts a deficit, we're fortunate enough to have a surplus this year. But it says in that, in the even year, that if we're behind, we need to catch up. And so if it's broke, we've got to fix it in the non-budget year as well. And that's basically a very simple two-piece bill. And also, I have from the governor's office, former Representative McElroy, who unfortunately I was too late to serve with, but many of you here were, and he would like to just address a couple of the components of this bill as well.
Mr. McElroy, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Dan McElroy. I serve as Senior Advisor to Governor Pawlenty on issues of innovation and was asked to represent the Governor's office on this issue. Let me first of all thank Representative Dean for carrying this bill on behalf of the Governor, and thank you, Madam Chair, for giving the bill a hearing. We look at this as an opportunity. We do not want it to be a partisan issue or an issue that inspires conflict. The credibility of state government is important to all of us. The credibility of the houses of the legislature is certainly important to all of us. I hope we're all looking. I've heard us all say that we're looking for ways to make the process work better, and we hope that this piece of legislation accomplishes that. An effort was made to keep it as simple as possible, to keep it as straightforward as possible, and to say to the public that we take seriously our responsibility to complete the work of adopting a budget and establishing revenues extremely seriously. Minnesota has one of, in my opinion, the finest constitutions of any state for a number of reasons. First of all, because we have a balanced budget requirement and do not have the ability to carry operating debt. We have mandatory adjournment by the Monday after the third Saturday in May. That started, it was adopted, it was added to the Constitution in 1972 and we went to biennial sessions, and I think it has served us well. We also have a provision that no money can be expended from the public treasury that has not been appropriated by the legislature. Those serve us well. I believe they would serve us just a little better if the added provision became part of statute, not the Constitution, but became part of statute, that there are some consequences to the governor and the members of the legislature if we fail to do the people's work in a timely fashion. With that, I would tell you this is an important bill to the governor. We think it's important to continue a tradition of Minnesota being a state that works, and of taking away the opportunity to use gridlock as a political strategy or to at least have some consequences to that strategy. We would appreciate your support for the bill. I'd be happy to stand for any questions that you may have.
Okay. Questions from members? Representative Loeffler.
Madam Chair and Representative Dean, I heard you say that, you know, you want to make government shutdown a can't-happen event, and I think we all agree with that. We in this committee have already passed the continuing appropriations legislation that would provide that that wouldn't happen. And you don't sit on this committee, so I just want to let you know that we have already heard a number of things that address this sort of issue as well. It's addressed also by a bill that we passed earlier this week out of committee that would say that during a special session, legislators would not be eligible for their per diem payments. And we are going to be spending some time next week on a whole package of legislative reform initiatives that have been discussed earlier in this committee, including ones that would change the time frame and I think actually create some increase accountability in terms of the budget calendar and the process by which issues come before us, both from the administration and our action on those. And I think there are a number of ways to solve this issue. I think the one that you've proposed is probably the one that works least in support of, I think, our core values as a democracy, which is to have a body that's representative of the people. And I want this body to always be available to people of lower income. I want it to be representative of people who can and are willing to step up and take the personal sacrifice and the sacrifice to their families to come to St. Paul to put in 12 to 14 or 16-hour days before committee deadlines, and who will thoughtfully do their work and balance out the needs of the state with the needs of their community and the needs of their own personal family. And I think it's hard enough to get good, quality, thoughtful people to consider the risks of political service, putting yourself on the line, giving up your personal life and that of many of your friends and supporters in pursuit of a dream of service. That's a real sacrifice in and of itself, and half the people who do that lose. But those who win should not be at risk of not being able to pay their house payment, of putting their family in financial risk, simply because one or two or three of the big leaders were unable to come to a compromise at a key point in the legislature. And I think the public understands that there's a difference between the role that all of us as 201 individual members play and what happens in the end when it's a very concentrated group of people. And we all can play a role in helping move things along, but legislative service is service that should be respected with a paycheck that the families that send their members here to serve can count on to make the mortgage payment. Many people take a pay cut to serve in the legislature. For some, it might be a pay increase. And that's a debate for a different era, in different time, about what is fair pay. But I think that to say the ultimate punishment for a type of situation in which two or three key leaders, or maybe it's 10 or 12 or 20, I like you, I'm a first-termer, and I'm not sure how many people are in that key inner circle, are at a point of impasse, I think is not the way to go if we're going to long-term attract the kind of representative body that I want to serve in. And so I think there are other solutions. I think some of them have been gone through. Some of them are coming up. And I just can't believe that this will work towards us recruiting the kind of people that we want to serve our state.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I would agree with many of the sentiments that you have voiced. I'd like to respectfully disagree saying that somehow that our paychecks are any more valuable than public employees' paychecks, and that our families are somehow different than DOT families who had to go without a paycheck as well. And so I think that some of us can afford things more than others, and I think it's more a matter of principle that we ought not stand in between an employee and their paycheck, and if we do so, we should join them, and that our sacrifices are no more than other public employees, particularly if they are losing that check as a result of no work or fault of their own. So I would respectfully disagree on that point. But I would say, in terms of accountability and increasing accountability, I would say that if this were to be enacted, I wish this were enacted last year, because I believe that we would not have had a government shutdown if this bill was in place, because there would have been 201 people who would hold accountable those decision makers who unfortunately brought us in that position. And I don't think we would have had a government shutdown had this bill been enacted last year and not this year. Thank you.
Okay, I have a list of members here. Next up, Representative Hoppe.
Madam Chair, could I just respond?
Oh, quick follow-up, Representative Loeffler.
Representative Dean, I just want to once again make the point that I agree with you. State employees should not be put at risk, or should their paychecks or their benefits be put at risk. And that's why I support, and we passed out of this committee, the continuing appropriation legislation, which would stop that as a risk to anyone.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Upon further reflection, I think I'll pass.
Okay. Next up, Representative Sheldon Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a brief comment, and that is I think this kind of bill actually tends to, in the long term, increase more of a cynical view of the work that we accomplish here, because it just suggests that our primary motivator as legislators and elected officials, governor and so forth, is money, and that's the reason why we hold off here for a special session or whatever, when in fact it's some very important issues that need to be resolved. And frankly, I don't think if this bill would have been in effect last year would have made that much a difference in terms of the work that needed to get done here, because there are some very serious policy differences that required some resolution. So in the long term, again, I don't think this is a helpful bill for good public policy and has the opposite effect.
Okay. Next up, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a very important bill, and Representative Dean, thank you for bringing it forward. And Madam Chair, I'd request a roll call vote.
Okay. Huh. Let's get some more discussion here, and roll call has been requested. Okay. Next up, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Dean, I do want to say thanks for carrying the bill. It kind of comes with mixed emotions on this, because to start off with, the legislative pay that we receive is not a huge compensation. But I will say that the original design of the representative government was to be be just that, a representative government, civil government, in which members who have a second occupation come to this place and are correct representatives of the bodies that they're representing, and that's not their main source of income. But I think as we were going through this discussion on the floor last year, Representative Emmer brought up a good point, stood up and started to point out all of the legislators that are full-time legislators here. This is their main occupation. That was never the intent of the initial body, and so these were moves that were moving on towards a full-time legislature, which I think in itself begins to go against the process that we were initially put here to do, and that's to perpetuate our own jobs. And so I've got mixed feelings when we start talking about salaries, because if you really want to attract good people, then you raise the salary. But if you raise the salary, you have people who are coming here full-time because that's their primary job, and then you lose the representative government that we have been put here to establish. So I think in the process that we're talking about here, where there are consequences for actually not getting our job done, that's kind of the fallout of what some would say was a justified impasse. I would say that's not the case at all. And I would hope that the Senate body, who has failed to act on numerous occasions and numerous bills that the House has put forward there, one of which Representative Broad brought forward, which was the staggered terms, basic reform for our legislative system, and they have failed to act on that. They also took per diem, is my understanding, the entire time we were in special session. This body elected to take per diem only when we were down here meeting. And so there are some huge differences there, and I would like to believe that if this is put forward with good faith, that the Senate would pick this bill up and say, this is something we can use to reform, but I don't necessarily see that happening. My hopes are that it will happen, and I just wanted to say thank you for bringing this bill forward.
Okay. Other questions from members? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dean, I have a series of questions for you, and they're pretty simple questions, I think, and I'm just going to kind of reel them off here. Well, actually, maybe I'll do them one by one and let you answer. I think they're pretty short and quick, if that's okay with the Chair. First of all, do you believe that there are no consequences to the shutdown in terms of consequences to us as legislators and to the governor without this bill?
Representative.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, I think perhaps you could bring up some of your own experiences from the last legislative session to kind of expand on that point or that question. I believe there are some. I believe that the public policy implications far outweigh any personal sacrifices that we have made, but maybe you could share some of those that you might want to relate.
Madam Chair.
Well, Representative
Dean, I mean, you're bringing this bill, and you're saying that we need this consequence in order to make sure that we get the job done. And so I'm asking you, do you believe that without this consequence that you're proposing here, that we don't have, that there are no consequences to us?
Well, I think you just have to look back a few months to see what the consequences were. I think we had agreements. I was there on the last day of the session. I believe you were there as well. And we were watching television in the retiring room, and we saw a Senate that adjourned. And I didn't see consequences for that matched what that did to the state or what it did to the DOT employees in my district.
Follow up, Representative Liebling.
Okay, well, Representative Dean, I mean, I think that perhaps the consequences haven't occurred yet since we haven't been through an election cycle, but let me go on to my second question, which is, do you believe that legislators are motivated primarily by money, or that money is even an important part of the motivation for people to come here?
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Liebling, I think that that it varies from member to member, depending. We are very fortunate to have a wide spectrum of different kinds of folks. We have very young people who probably rely entirely on their paycheck here at the legislature. We have people who've been very successful in their business life, it probably doesn't make much of a difference at all whether they deposit that check into the account or not. But I think that we have a wide variety of incomes, and I think that it's very important to be sensitive to that, and particularly to the outstate members who do make more of a sacrifice to be here than I do. I realize that, and I think we need to be more sensitive to those particular members. But I think, to answer your question, the sacrifices financially between some members and others is very different.
Follow up, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Dina, the third question was going to be one that I think you already answered, which is whether you believe we all would be equally affected by this bill were it to go into effect and were there to be another shutdown, and I think your answer to that is already no, that the effects would vary among legislators depending on their circumstances. So my last question to you is, do you believe that we all share equal responsibility for a shutdown, such as what happened in your and my first year here? Did you and I as freshman legislators share equal responsibility, and did all legislators share equal responsibility such that everyone should be equally punished, so to speak?
Well, I don't...
Representative Dean.
Excuse me. Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, I believe that the bill you have before you, as I said before, is about preventing this from happening again and creating an accountability, and that not all of your DOT employees in your district probably had the same level of sacrifice, probably some more than others. So I would say that obviously it does vary from person to person, but it is another layer of accountability that I think that if you talk to folks on Main Street in Rochester, they would probably agree with this bill.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Okay. Next up, Representative Haas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Dean, for bringing this forward. I should probably tell you, I think unfortunately you have an uphill battle on this. We had a per diem bill just a couple of days earlier, and it failed miserably here. And, I think it's kind of the same pretenses that we showed.
It did pass. What did you say from my finance?
The per diem bill?
Yeah, what did you say from my finance?
We said it passed.
It passed.
The chair ruled that it passed.
You said it passed?
Well,
it passed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, it passed. The record of
okay, well,
showed
so
that it
from
passed.
My hearing, maybe it's because I'm deaf in an ear, I thought it failed, but I'm glad that it passed.
The record of the minute, that it passed.
Okay. Well, I just, Madam Chair, since I've been corrected on that, I don't have much of a point to make. I want to make sure that there's consistency in our principles on this, so I would hope that this passes along with that.
Good point.
Madam Chair, Representative Hodge, Madam Chair, Representative Hodge, the news of the death of this bill was greatly exaggerated, apparently, so it lives on for another day.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, for my poor hearing.
No problem. Okay. Any other questions from members? Otherwise, we do have an amendment that coming up. Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and Representative Dean, we've... A couple times you've alluded to the problems with regards to the state employees, and just wondering what your thoughts are. And I understand they've come to some agreement that they would get half of their wages, but why would that be reasonable? I mean, it seems like we're up here and we're doing the discussion. I was just wondering why your thoughts would allow that they should be paid for half of their time.
Representing.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative Lilly. I guess I don't understand your question. Are you saying that I'm opposed to those folks getting some of that payback?
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Dean. It just seems like it'd be reasonable since it really wasn't their fault, and they're just kind of an innocent casualty of what's going on at the Capitol. Not arguing who's to blame. But it just seems it would be the right thing to do to treat employees the way, you know, all of us would like to be treated, probably, and to make them whole. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are in regards to that.
Representative.
Madam Chair, Representative Lilly, I understand that those discussions are going on currently. I don't know if they are finalized, but perhaps.
Mr. McElroy.
Madam Chair. This was an issue that was negotiated between the exclusive bargaining groups and through the Department of Employee Relations. The challenge was to not treat those people who worked during that period, those state employees, differently or unfairly in comparison to those who, from the view at least of some state employees, were able to go on vacation or use comp time or in other ways not work. The agreement that was negotiated and is out now for a vote by the members of the bargaining units would restore 50% of the vacation of those who used vacation and would provide cash settlement for those who didn't have vacation. And it was a balance between treating those who worked and got paid fairly compared to those who didn't work and at least got paid something. And I don't think the executive branch would argue it was a perfect agreement, but it was negotiated in good faith between the unions and management.
Follow up, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My understanding of the negotiation is that, I think they were offered that or nothing. So it wasn't really, I'm not sure that they really had a lot of choice. I'm not sure, I guess, can you answer my question? Were they offered by the negotiation team from the state representing the governor's staff, were they offered full reimbursement for the time off that was beyond their control? Or would you argue that it was really their fault that we had a shutdown, these employees that we're referring to, Mr. McNamara, or Mr.
McElroy.
Sorry, sir. I'm sorry.
Mr. McElroy.
Madam Chair, I wasn't in the negotiations, so I can't give you kind of a blow-by-blow. But the balancing act was that even within the unions there was concern to not... they had some pressure of those who had worked and got paid feeling badly if people who hadn't worked at all, and in many cases had gone on vacation, were treated the same way they had been worked when they worked particularly hard. So I don't know exactly what was offered. I do know that there wasn't we are under contract. There wasn't a legal obligation to negotiate this. We thought it was a fair and right thing to negotiate. But I can't tell you what the options were. I wasn't there.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. One of my problems is I've tried to make some inquiries on this, and part of the negotiations, and
The final resolution is that the leadership of AFSCME and MAEP are unable to communicate. And is that true? My understanding is that part of the negotiation settlement is that they cannot come up to here, to the Capitol, and ask us to make them whole. So it's kind of an interesting deal. Well, and then I have a question for Mr. Dean. I have a bill that I've turned in, and it's authored by Madden Tenza and myself, and to make an attempt to make the state workers whole. One of my arguments is for this case is that it really wasn't their fault. They're kind of victims of what went on, and I would argue that many of us up here weren't able to participate, even though I voted for Mr. Olson's amendments day after day after day after day, as Mr. Dempsey would say. I gave it many, many chances to keep the government running, but nonetheless, there was victims, and I just think that it was very disappointing what we did to these state workers, and I just think, you know, when you hire an employee, that you should treat them well. Growing up in small business and now working for a large company, I think it's really important that we, as a state, really set a good example of treating our employees well, and that was not a very good case of us treating our employees well. So I was just wondering, is it indeed part of the case that they cannot talk to us? Is anybody familiar with this? Because I've made efforts to talk to union leadership, and they've basically said that they're unable to talk to us.
Mr. McRae.
Madam Chair, Representative Lilly, I don't know. I wasn't in the meeting, and I have not heard that before.
Okay.
Madam Chair, it's just one of the things, too, that was so frustrating is because I think of our state workers, and I think that, you know, I just find them to be good, hardworking people trying to do a good job that we've hired them to do. And this was a case where we just really treated them poorly and didn't show appreciation for the efforts. And I would argue that all of in-state employees are essential. You know, getting into that essential versus non-essential argument, I would argue that they're all essential or we really shouldn't have them. So I guess I was disappointed, and I would just wonder if Representative Dean would be interested in signing on to that bill to make state employees whole for the time that they were let go during our negotiations here at the Capitol. So I understand your arguments for not getting us paid, but what about the rest of the state of Minnesota? Is that the way to go? Is that the way to treat our employees? I would argue that it really isn't a good example and that we can do much better as state leaders.
Representative Lilly, we'll get a response here in a minute from Representative Dean, but I do want to just make a note to members that we do need to stay on the topic of the bill specifically. We're getting a little off track, and we're kind of running short of time here. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lilly, first of all, I share your frustration with that, and to that bill, you can stop up at 417 SOB anytime. I'm always happy to have you in my office, and we can chat about that bill or anything else. But what we're looking at here is this bill, and this bill looks forward to next session and not backward to last session, but it's something that you can take to folks in your district and to say that, you know, I want to be a change agent, and I want to make sure that this doesn't happen again, and this is one thing that I can do to prevent that from happening in the future. So that's what this bill's about.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your efforts, and I certainly believe that you really mean well by what you're doing here. I just really question, and many have mentioned it here, the merits of going down this road of per diems and whatnot. I think as a legislator, we've made a mistake because, I think Mr. Beard really has helped kind of articulate some of those thoughts and some of the problems that how well this, you know, is portrayed in the media and some of the perceptions of what we're doing here. And it's all about per diem, and it's really not. No one's getting rich here. I haven't met anybody that's here for the money. So, and I hate to have a scenario where people that are wealthy legislators can outlast people that aren't maybe as affluent, maybe have to go throw luggage like I do to make a living, you know. I think that we could do much better by getting rid of per diem and working on some of the reforms that Representative Loeffler has referred to, and having a flat wage and eliminating the per diem discussion. And I didn't take per diem during the special session, but most of it is, quite honestly, out of fear. But it was also with regards to what you're saying about the state workers, going back to them. And I really felt bad about how we treated them during this whole process. And I wish that we could do more to address that and make them whole through this whole thing. So none of this in this bill makes, which I think is the bigger problem, is making them, you know, whole for the time that they've were not paid. So thank you for your time.
Okay, next up, Representative Seibert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to piggyback on Representative Lilly's comments, Representative Lilly, you make some great arguments for this bill. I was with you. I didn't take per diem during special session, and I think this would put us in what happened happened. We really can't change what happened. We can try to fix it, but the intent of this bill, and I recently signed on to it and I support it, is to put us in lockstep with the workers, the government workers that did get shut down. And I'm just like you, you know, I'm an hourly employee, and special session hurt when I didn't take per diem, and I had to make up for that. And I think with that extra pain added with this bill and with the per diem bill, I think we will be more in lockstep with the workers, and we'll put pressure on whoever's causing the shutdown. And so I think your comments really do support this bill, and I ask you to everybody to support this bill.
Okay. Next up, Representative Khan.
Madam Chairman, I have a question for Representative Dean. There were some attempts to try and advance the business of the House during the special session. For example, Representative Olson, just about every day, had a resolution. How did you vote on those?
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Khan. I hung in there with him for a while.
Okay.
I don't recall how many.
Okay.
Representative Khan.
I guess I'll. We're going to have an amendment before us. I'll wait till then.
Okay. Other questions? Otherwise, let's get to the amendment. Okay. Representative Olson has the A1 amendment. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Amendment. I would like to move the A1 amendment be adopted.
Okay. It's before us. Please describe your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This amendment takes the governor out of the initial provisions of the bill, subdivision 2 and 3, and it brings the governor back in subdivision 5 if he vetoes any of the bills that the House and Senate pass. So any budget bills that are vetoed, and if it requires a special session be called, then the governor would lose his pay until he calls us back into session and we pass those bills and they are signed. Then there's an exemption from forfeiture, a new subdivision 4, that says members who, it says that whenever a committee, conference committee, or other subgroup prevents, I'm going to add some language here in a minute, but a majority of the full House or Senate from taking legislative action to move us forward and adopt our budget bills in the last 2 weeks, they would be exempt. If members who are not a part of those subgroups or committees or conference committees would be exempt if those subgroups actually prevent us from taking action. Just like this is an effort to address a scenario that we basically showed through our effort last year with 14 motions to take action. When we reached a simple majority, which was 67 and 72 votes in the final two actions, we basically proved by that a minority of the body was preventing action and caused a government shutdown. So even before that, it was happening, but we proved it in document when we reached 67 and 72 votes, because that is a simple majority of the body. And so this is an effort to address that. Representative Loeffler mentioned the concerns related to this, and Representative Liebling mentioned them, and I know others have as well. And I don't have a problem with this. I'm not convinced that the salary is that big of a deal to many members, but it is to some. And it could have a desirable effect, but I believe it should be just. And that if we don't have an option to take action, we should at least have a sense of justice of if we're innocent for the problem, we shouldn't be losing our salary. So this is an effort to make sure that if we're all able to take action, we would lose our salary. If we're not able to take action, we would not lose our salary, at least in the last 2 weeks.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, I have to make one correction to the amendment on line 17.
Representative Olson moves the following oral amendment be incorporated within his A1 amendment. Representative Olson.
On line 17, the word beans, the third word there, needs to be begins. That was it.
Oh,
an error?
Strike beans and insert begins.
And then on line 9, this is an actual addition. After the word prevents, insert a majority of. And on the same line, delete the words the full. So it would read, or other subgroup prevents a majority of the full House of Representatives or Senate from taking legislative action.
Okay. Representative Olson incorporates that within his A1 amendment. Does anyone want that repeated?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Olson, if you could repeat the changes you've just incorporated. Representative Olson.
Okay. I'll start with the correction first again at the end. On line 17, delete the word beans and insert begins. That was an error. And on line 9, after the word prevents, insert the words a majority of and delete the words on the same line 9, the full. So it would read, or other subgroup prevents a majority of the full House of Representatives or Senate.
Okay, so that is incorporated within the A1 amendment. Representative Kahn.
Oh, okay. It's the second, the full.
That's correct.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. There are two the fulls, but I'm... thank you, Representative Kahn. It's the second, the full.
Okay, Representative Kahn.
Thank you.
So, the A1 amendment.
Yeah, I don't quite... We don't take votes in joint conventions. How do you quite get a vote of the majority of the full House of Representatives? How do you determine that you're stopping the majority of the full of the House of Representatives, the full House of Representatives or the full Senate? What if one passes it and the other one doesn't? Then who do you hit with?
Representative Kahn, I'm not sure I fully understand your question, but let me...
Okay, well, let me just...
Which line is that, Representative Kahn?
Well, I now understand what line 1.9 does. I'm just trying to understand how you determine that a subgroup has prevented... How do you determine whether you're in the subgroup or out of the subgroup? That's what I'm trying to...
Representative Kahn,
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's take the example of last year. I tried 14 times to take action. And we all know the rules required a supermajority. And the rules committee is what was technically preventing the action, because the rules committee did not give us anything to vote on. And those who are not a member under this, could it be tweaked and worked on and add clarity to it? Yes. This is my first one that I felt was good enough for public viewing. And the rules committee left us without anything to act on. Because we go into a special session, all the session rules apply, and until they give us something to act on, we can't act on anything. I just took a mechanism in rule, the general session rules, regular session rules, to try to take action and raise the point and awareness that a minority of the body was controlling the body. And I proved it in document once we reach a majority vote on my effort, which was 2 votes. But before that, you could even show that even if, by looking at the rules, you could even make the case that even though we didn't reach a majority all 14 times, you can prove that a minority of the body was ruling the body. Because we all know that on every motion, had we reached majority, we still couldn't have acted. And this is to raise the point that if those in control of the process, or those in control, those established to be in control, whether it be by default, where we have no rules that give the speaker the authority he or she would exercise, or it be the actual rules that give the Rules Committee the gatekeeping power of the body and giving it permission to vote. Either way, this amendment is intended to exempt those who aren't a part of that process, don't have the privilege. Equal representation, we should all have the same voice, and that's the effort here to make sure that we...
Okay. Members, we're running out of time here, so if you could keep your responses short. Representative Kahn.
Well, I just want a specific example. In that scenario, are the only people who would have the suffer the forfeiture of the members of the Rules Committee under this scenario?
Representative Olson, briefly.
Madam Chair, under that scenario, during the special session, it would be the as I read this, it would be the Speaker, the Senate Majority Leader, and the Rules Committee of both bodies. Under the regular session scenario, when we're dealing with conference committee reports not being reported to the body, it would be conference committee members as well.
Well,
Representative Kahn, quickly.
Madam Chairman, so would you get out of your, suppose you were a member of the Rules Committee, would you get out of your culpability by making a motion that we put a rule up and having a vote in Rules Committee? So that, I'm just trying to get the scenarios up to date. And for example, would you get, if you were on a dissident conference committee, would you get out of your culpability by making the motion that the conference committee accept the last report that's been before them and pass it and call for a roll call vote on that?
Madam Chair,
Representative Kahn, quickly.
You asked an excellent question, and it's the reason why there are problems with this overall bill, because who's at fault? The one who voted no or the one who voted yes? The point I'm making is if we can't even take action, if we can't even vote yes or no, why should we lose our pay?
Well,
okay, Representative Kahn, quickly.
Are the Rules Committee, who gets the job of assigning the fault? We do a special committee that does that? Or does the Rules Committee do that? Or does the Speaker's office do it and the Committee on Committees in the Senate do it?
Representative Olson, it sounds like there's a lot of questions on this amendment. This bill is going to state government finance. Perhaps you could work with Representative Dean between now and then and get some of these questions answered. And
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn's question applies to the bill as
okay.
well.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to get some resolution on this and get a vote on the amendment.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dean.
Yeah, I just quickly to the amendment. Number one, I think that it goes against the intent of the document. This isn't about fault. It's about responsibility and accountability. And being accountable to one's members, I think, is very important. And that's really the heart of the bill. So the first section, exemption from forfeiture, really goes against that. And I'd also just like to say that technically I don't think it works, because on line 1.11, we refer to the final 2 weeks of legislative session. In a special session, we don't know what that is. So I'd be happy to work with Representative Olson as we move forward to state government finance. But I think as it is right now, this goes against the intent and simply doesn't work. And therefore, I would be strongly opposed to this.
Okay. Do you have any other questions on A1 amendment? Representative Liebling.
Madam Chair, I would ask for a roll call on the amendment.
Yeah.
Roll call being requested. Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that Representative Dean has worked with me on this, and I know that we're talking about an extremely complicated situation in the respect that how do you decide who's at fault when somebody votes no or yes? I mean, either side can give to bring agreement. It takes two to tangle. And you can't say the no's are at fault, because the yeses could have given a little, so they become yeses. And you can't say the yeses are at fault, because the no's could have given a little, so it worked. Either way, you can't say either is at fault. And that's the essence of the bill. And accountability, this makes certain that the leadership knows, and those in the subgroups know, that if they won't listen to us say, do the work, that they're the only ones that are going to lose their pay. And they can't put that on us to force us. So I think it's close, much closer than what the bill is to what would be worthy of passing out of here. There is a problem with the special session. I concur with that. But that's certainly something I would agree to fix on the way in when we get it to state government finance, if in fact we do. Madam Chair, my point is that I think this amendment is critical to make this bill acceptable to move out of this committee.
Next up, Representative McMurray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want a yes or no from Representative Olson. I want to confirm that based on what it says in line 1.11 that it does not have anything to do with special session.
Quickly, Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, no.
Okay.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'm going to have to ask. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to have counsel because Representative Olson has been talking and talking about special session, and the bill specifically refers to the final 2 weeks of the legislative session. Mr. Shepard, could that be the final 2 weeks of special session? I just am uncomfortable voting on a bill that the author says one thing, but it looks to me like it says something different.
Mr. Shepard.
Madam Chair, and of course, I would yield to Representative Olson, the author, to clarify this. As I read it, it doesn't specify regular or special, so I think it could apply to both. But that could easily be clarified by saying in the final 2 weeks of a regular or special session, or by dropping that entire phrase, starting the word in.
Madam Chair.
Representative Olson.
If it helps committee members, vote for it now. And a way of clarifying it for now, we could drop that. Because I just realized the reason why I thought it should apply to a special session is because under this language in the regular session, certain members might not have lost their pay. But in the special session under this, they could. That's why it needs to apply to both. But for now, if we need to drop that language, I'd be happy to drop that.
Okay,
language.
Representative Olson incorporates the following oral amendment within his A1 amendment. Representative Olson, the specifics, this is line 111.
Period after 3 and delete the rest of the sentence on line 11.
Okay, Representative Olson incorporates that within his A1 amendment on line 111. Period after 3, delete the rest of the sentence. Okay? I think we're getting close to a vote on this amendment, and it is a roll call. Let's go back to the author of the bill. Representative Dean.
Once again, just to kind of recap from earlier, I would oppose this amendment, but would look forward to working with Representative Olson and anyone else on it, on improving it on the way to state government finance, so I do oppose this amendment.
Representative Kahn, quickly.
Yes, just on this amendment, I would move to delete lines 1.2 and 1.5. I mean, I think it doesn't make any sense to say that the governor isn't responsible for the... I'm sorry, 1.2 to... Yes, yeah, I'm sorry, 1.2 to 1.4. This bill came in with a certain balance, and I think it's ridiculous to take away that balance.
Representative Kahn has moved an oral amendment to the A1... amendment, and Representative Kahn, it's deleting 1.2, 1.3, and 1.4. Is that correct? Okay. Taking out those three lines of the amendment.
And I won't call for a roll.
Okay. Any discussion on the Kahn oral amendment to delete those three lines of the amendment?
Madam Chair, that's acceptable to me. I consider that as an option as well.
Okay. Do you want to just incorporate that?
Nicely
things.
Representative Kahn withdraws her oral amendment. Representative Olson incorporates the following oral amendment within his A1 amendment to delete lines 1.2, 1.3, and 1.4. Okay, we are back to the A1 amendment as amended, and roll call has been requested. Is there any further discussion?
No.
Let's hear from Representative Dean. What do you think about the A1 amendment as amended?
Once again, I think it goes against the theme of the bill, which is about not about fault, it's about accountability and responsibility, and also for the reasons of the technical problems with the amendment, I would oppose this.
Okay, let's get a vote here. Roll call being requested on the A1 amendment as amended. The clerk will take the roll.
Vice Chair Severson?
No.
Beard?
Aye.
Seibert?
No.
Representative Demmer?
No.
Representative Dempsey?
No.
Representative Hawes?
Aye.
Representative Hoppe?
No.
Representative Hoche?
Aye.
Representative Ruth Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Sheldon Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Kahn?
Aye.
Representative Liebling?
Liebling?
Aye. Sorry, Liebling? Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative Loeffler?
Aye.
Representative McNamara?
No.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Aaron Peterson?
No.
Representative Neil Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Seifert?
No.
Representative Wardlow?
Yes, it does.
Is that a no?
Representative Wardlow?
No.
Representative Welty?
Aye.
Chair Tinglestad?
No. There being 12 ayes and 10 noes, the motion prevails and the A1 amendment is approved. Adopted. Sorry. Okay. Members, we are back to the bill as amended. And there's been a roll call requested on the final bill as it goes out of committee here to State Government Finance. Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman, now that the bill has been amended, are you still in favor of it, Representative Dean?
Representative
Dean. Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, I certainly liked it better the way it was, but I would appreciate an affirmative vote, move it on to State Government Finance.
Okay. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Dean. I appreciate your tolerance of me on this because I can now vote for the bill. I do believe this is about accountability. It's not just fault. But in accountability, there's always a concern of fault. And I think now the bill is something worthy to move to the next committee, and I'd urge members' support.
Okay. Anybody from the audience like to testify for or against the bill as amended? Okay. Roll call being requested to the House File 2961 as amended. Clerk will take the roll.
Vice Chair Severson.
Yes.
Representative Beard.
Pass.
Representative Seibert.
Yes.
Representative Demmer.
Yes.
Representative Dempsey.
Yes.
Representative Hawes.
Yes.
Representative Hoppe.
Aye.
Representative Hoche.
Aye.
Representative Ruth Johnson.
No.
Representative Sheldon Johnson.
No.
Representative Kahn?
No.
Representative Liebling?
No.
Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative Loeffler?
No.
Representative McNamara?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Aaron Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Neil Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Seifert?
Aye.
Representative Wardlow?
Aye.
And Representative Welty?
Aye.
I believe I go back to Representative Beard.
Aye.
Chair Tinglestad?
Aye. There being 17 ayes and 4 noes, 5 noes, excuse me, 17 to 5, the bill does pass as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Okay, members, I would like to stay in here about another 10, 15 minutes or so. We had a lively discussion here over the last couple days. I'm hoping that members will stay in the room here for a few minutes. And members, as you can see from your minutes, when we recessed and then adjourned yesterday, we still had House File 3078 before us. And then, so I'm announcing right now that we're going to take up House File 3078 again. And we also had passed the motion to reconsider. So with that, Representative McNamara. Yes.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
Can we still, I don't see it. I thought since the bill was still before us, we didn't have the language that was in the bill. So
we have these things coming around.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe the page is going to pass around to meet Representative Kahn's concerns. It'll both be the transcription from the legislative assistant, and it'll be Mr. Shepard's marked-up copy. And I would make a motion to go back to my original amendment. It was the DE1 amendment. Would be my motion, Madam Chair.
Representative McNamara moves the DE1 amendment to House File 3078. Discussion to that amendment.
Yes, thank you.
Representative Kahn.
First of all, I'd like to wait until all members have the
yes, we will.
Copy of the bill in front of them.
Around.
I'd like to make a series of amendments, one at a time.
Okay, we have about 7 minutes, so
yes.
Go at it.
Well,
Representative Kahn moves the following or amendment to the DE1 amendment.
No, and I guess Representative McNamara has the choice of accepting them or not accepting them. I'd like to move the first one, line 1.11. I'd like to move that amendment, and I'd like to ask for a roll call vote.
I don't understand your oral amendment.
Okay, this is the one. The amendment is, I'm using the transcription. Thank you very much for giving the transcription. I'd like to, the first one, line 1.11, delete two each from the majority and minority caucuses and insert at least three of whom must represent the taconite assistance area defined in Minnesota statute section 273.1341. And I'd like to call for a roll call vote on that. And I have some comments on it.
Okay, Representative Kahn, I understand what you're doing. We've spent an hour and a half on this bill. You know, we need to be out of the room here within 10 minutes.
I'd like to have some comments. You know, something happened, apparently. When these amendments, this amendment, and I guess I did do it maybe as one amendment, but when I did these amendments, we accepted them unanimously in the committee. I think we accepted them without dissent. And I'll say one of the reasons that, and I was in looking at Representative McNamara gave this impassioned plea about how well the LCMR task force worked, of which I was a member, and you, Madam Chair, and Representative Singlestead and Representative McNamara both sat in on it. And one of the reasons it worked so well was that we took the time and really came to consensus. And I think all of us and one of the things was that the people who were directly involved in that process were part of the discussion. So all I'm saying in this, and I actually guess that my amendment has to have both of the first two. So I'd like to amend my amendment to have the 1.11 amendment and the 112.
Representative Kahn incorporates within her oral amendment that it would be both of those
first two
as noted on the handout.
And I think the reason why that works so well, and that made sense was that the people who were involved in the process were part of it. Both the citizens who were actively involved in the process were part of it, and besides that, the legislative members who were chosen, and it's true that they were chosen by the language which set up the task force set them up specifically by caucus, but you know, are the retired members of LCMR from House and from the Senate, and but they were chosen by LCMR. And one of the reasons that works so well is that, and you know, I know you're a member of LCMR now, and I'm not, so I don't know who knows what about it. But one of the nicest things about LCMR, and I don't want to say how you know that it made every decision wonderful in the past, was that it never acted as a partisan group. In fact, there was one time I served as chair of LCMR for two terms in various successions, and in fact, my candidacy, and it was actually a newsworthy were the time that I became chair, because I actually beat out Willard Munger to become the chair of LCMR, and my candidacy was actively promoted by the Republican members of LCMR.
Okay, let's get a vote on this then.
So I think the the important part of this amendment,
Madam Chair,
the clerk will take the roll.
Well, Madam Chair, I haven't finished. I'm in the middle of a statement, and I think on the
because it's your birthday, I'm going to indulge you for one more minute, and then the clerk will take the roll for 30 seconds.
I'll just say that what's fair about this amendment is that it puts in the people who are concerned about what's happening there for the money. And so that's why I think you are just accepting everything on that amount.
Okay, the clerk will take the roll on Kahn's oral amendment.
Chair Tingleston?
No.
Vice Chair Severson?
No.
Representative Beard?
No.
Representative Seibert?
No.
Representative Demmer?
No.
Representative Dempsey?
No.
Representative Haas?
Yes.
Representative Hoppe?
No.
Representative Hoche?
Yes.
Representative Ruth Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Sheldon Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Kahn?
Yes.
Representative Liebling?
Yes.
Representative Lilly?
Yes.
Representative Loeffler?
Yes.
Representative McNamara?
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Aaron Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Neil Peterson?
No.
Representative Seifert?
No.
Representative Wardlow?
No.
Representative Welty?
Yes.
There being 10 ayes and 12 noes, the motion does not prevail. Representative McNamara, your DE1 amendment.
I'd appreciate a yes vote.
This is... Just a sec. The amendment, I did have some discussions with Representative... I would like to move the second part. I did have some discussions with Representative McNamara yesterday, and I thought he was willing to accept that.
Okay.
Lines 113 to 114. The governor must designate one of the members to serve as chair, and except members must elect co-chairs, one of whom must be a legislator and one a citizen.
Representative Kahn has moved that oral amendment.
Madam Chair, I do not support that amendment.
Okay, then I'd like a roll call vote on that one.
Okay, roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll. She's been on the job for 1 week, and she's had all these roll calls.
What?
Okay. The clerk will take the roll on Representative Kahn's second oral amendment.
Chair Tingleston?
No.
Vice Chair Severson?
No.
Representative Beard?
No.
Representative Seibert?
No.
Representative Demmer?
No.
Representative Dempsey?
No.
Representative Haas?
Yes.
Representative Hoppe?
No.
Representative Hoche?
Yes.
Representative Ruth Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Sheldon Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Kahn?
Yes.
Representative Liebling?
Yes.
Representative Lilly?
Yes.
Representative Loeffler?
Yes.
Representative McNamara?
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Aaron Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Neil Peterson?
No.
Representative Seifert?
No.
Representative Wardlow?
No.
Representative Welty?
Yes.
There being 10 ayes and 12 noes, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative McNamara, we're back to your DE1 amendment.
I'd appreciate a yes vote, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Haas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say that this is very disappointing. The whole reason this happened is because we are unwilling to work together in the first place. I thought this was reasonable. It was unanimously supported. And people wonder why we can't get along. It's because of things like this. I don't think this is, too much to ask for. And it's unfortunate that, little things like this, which have proven to be effective in the past with the LCMR board, can't even be done on a bipartisan basis. I will never change my mind like this. And it's not a partisan thing. And I just want to say I'm very disappointed.
That's so noted. You mentioned LCMR, but I think you meant the Iron Range Resources.
No.
Representative Haas.
The amendment that we just discussed that was approved unanimously 2 days ago was modeled after the LCMR. We had testifiers in front of here who talked about how it was so great to come to consensus amid a lot of division. If it was successful then, why wouldn't we follow it now? And it's because of partisanship. It's that simple.
Just for the record, Representative Hosh, I do not think it was unanimous. It was a voice vote that was...
There was no...
Right. Okay.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Kahn.
There was a voice vote with no dissent. There was no dissenting discussion about any part of the amendment. And just to correct Representative Hosh, it was not it was Representative McNamara who kept referring to how wonderful the LCMR process was, not some random person from the audience. And I just think he expressed my opinions better than I could have myself. So.
Okay, are we ready for a vote? I don't think I can remember what we're voting on. Okay.
DE1 amendment, Madam Chair.
So the DE1 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. We're back to the House File 3078 as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's real important to note that this 3078 now is a task force, similar to what was so successful at the LCMR, and I'd appreciate a yes vote. Thank you very much.
What's
Does it still go to my committee, or are we sending it to the floor, or what?
Take care of my finance.
All right.
That's the motion.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Kahn.
I want to ask the chair of state government finance, does he really want it, and why?
Is that questioning motives, so, though? I don't know.
No.
Representative Seifert.
Well, Madam Chair, it does change a lot of things relating to state government, and the title says relating to state government, so I think Representative Pennis, the author, said she'd like it to go there, and I'd be happy to take it. I usually follow what the authors would like unless it's really egregious. So.
Okay. Chair renews the motion that House File 3078 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to State Government Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails and bill goes to State Government Finance. Members, we did not get to Representative Beard's bill. We'll add that at the beginning of our agenda tomorrow. We're going to be back here at 10 a.m. in the basement hearing room. We'll go till about 5 tomorrow. Check the website for updates. With that, meeting is adjourned.